Now, the $2 trillion CARES Act was passed about 3 weeks ago as an attempt to shore up the American economy during the COVID-19 pandemic. Parts of the legislation have already been put into place. Some have been exhausted. Others are still getting up to speed. In addition, both the White House and Congress have indicated that more might be needed, but what that might look like is not clear. David Primo is the Ani and Mark Gabrielian Professor and Professor of Political Science at Business Administration at the University of Rochester. His latest book, Campaign Finance and American Democracy, What the Public Really Thinks and Why It Matters, is due out in June. David, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you.
Well, this $2 trillion stimulus package did a lot. There are things for individuals, small business, big business, healthcare, and more. Looking at it, what do you see as the most important aspects when it came to the effort to limit the damage to the economy?
A lot of this comes down to liquidity. So in other words, most small businesses have very little cash available at any point in time. Many Americans have very little cash available at any point in time. So when revenue stops coming in for a small business, right, that's sales and so on, for an average American, that is income from their jobs, how do you pay the bills? What do you do to stay afloat? And so what this package is intended to do is provide Americans, provide businesses the liquidity they need to sort of maintain the companies, maintain their households, and so on. The big question I think that we're grappling with as a country is, for how long can this go on, and how much money is the federal government going to have to outlay in order to make Americans' lives sustainable over the next few months, and at what cost in terms of the long-run fiscal future we face?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment, because this $2 trillion kind of came out of nowhere. We already had, unusually in a good economy, we had a really big annual deficit going to begin with, plus the debt we've built up over the years. How does this $2 trillion now factor into our long-term debt issue?
You know, if this was just a one-shot deal, we had to spend $2 trillion and then we can move on, the U.S. economy and the federal budget could probably absorb that over the long run. But as you pointed out, this is just the latest in a string of additions to the federal debt. So during the Great Recession, we saw a massive run-up in the federal debt to stabilize the economy. President Trump's tax cuts, by most accounts, have added to the national debt. Now we're seeing this $2 trillion on top of, as you point out, the existing deficits, meaning that one estimate this week is that our budget deficit this year for the country would be about 20% of the nation's economic output. To put that into context for everyone, usually, to the extent we have rules that limit national government deficits around the world, countries try to limit their deficits in a given year to about 3% of output. So this is six times what we should be seeing at the maximum level. And my fear is that we're going to see demands for more government spending now to stabilize the economy, as many people believe is needed. But we still have all of these long-range fiscal problems to deal with that nobody's paying attention to and haven't been paying attention to for years. So we have Social Security, we have Medicare. These were before the crisis hit now. These were things that economists have been worried about for years. What happens now if we're adding several more $1 trillion to the debt? That just makes dealing with those fiscal problems that are maybe 10, 15, 20 years down the road, it actually makes them more important to deal with than before the crisis. The problem is nobody wants to talk about this. This is sort of the third rail of American politics right now. It is viewed as impolitic to discuss the fact that we're adding a massive amount to our national debt. So the implication is we're all just supposed to say, sure, whatever it takes to stabilize the economy right now. And to some degree, I agree with the sentiment, right? We don't want the economy to go into a depression, but we also need to be careful that this money is deployed carefully and that there's a plan and we're not just throwing money at a problem without actually thinking about where it's going.
Talking to David Primo from the University of Rochester, looking at the CARES Act, the $2 trillion economic recovery effort from Congress and the president. Individuals starting to get that money now. Small businesses, they've used it up pretty much, that allotment. There's talk about bringing more of that into it as well. David, this is something that policymakers were trying to do quickly. I think they saw time being of the essence. So that said, do you feel like this was a good plan. The way this $2 trillion came out is being spent effectively.
It's almost unfair to criticize Congress and the president in this for the first piece of legislation, because they were under a massive amount of pressure and there really was a time sensitivity to this. That said, you know, the plan for getting money to Americans hasn't necessarily been rolled out as smoothly as we would like. The small business loan initiative hasn't been rolled out as smoothly as we would like. Ideally, right, we would have had time to ramp up these programs, but of course, time is very limited these days. We need to get money into the hands of people quickly if we're going to go down that road, if that's the approach we're going to use. Where we can criticize Congress and the president, though, is in the dithering that's going on right now about whether we're going to have another stimulus bill and what it's going to look like. Right. This is an example of, you could almost say the equivalent of political malpractice. Just to continue sort of this backbiting and this fighting, all of this noise we're seeing between the president and Congress, they just need to sit down and figure something out. Now, of course, there's a lot of disagreements in Washington. There's a lot of bad blood. That said, if you can't overcome that at the time of a crisis, then that gives me very little hope that we're going to be able to see much in the way of progress on other issues once the crisis is abated.
I want to talk about oversight a little bit. Congress had required an inspector general be appointed to head a committee to make sure this money is used wisely and legally and ethically and all that. The president effectively demoted the inspector general who was selected, Glenn Fine. Do you have concerns about that change just as this thing is swinging into gear, that the people who are supposed to be minding the store on how this is spent aren't maybe where they need to be?
The president's decision was unfortunate in that it created a distraction at a time when we don't need any more distractions. One of the things that's concerned me about the entire crisis beyond, right, the toll on humanity, is that we've just added so much noise now to the news cycle that it's very hard for the average American to figure out what's actually important and what's not important. So I wish we weren't spending so much time talking about whether or not the president is going to have his signature on checks or his name on the checks that are going out to households. Right. That seems like noise. Now, the removal of an inspector general the lack of oversight in how this money is spent, that is more of a concern, and that is a manufactured concern that the president created by, again, removing this individual. It would have been much better had he not. Will there still be oversight of how this money is spent? I'm pretty optimistic there will be, but will it happen with the speed and the efficiency that we would like? That is an open question.
We're talking to David Primo right now from the University of Rochester, looking at economic recovery efforts from the federal government. The biggie, the $2 trillion CARES Act, other things maybe in the works. As he said, there's some partisan dispute over what that would look like. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these economic recovery efforts so far? Have you received those personal payments if you were eligible? Are you still watching out for them? Are they something that's going to make a difference for you, in particular if you are, a small business owner who's been hit hard, or an employee who's been laid off or furloughed? Where should priorities be? What else needs to happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The Spring Member Drive support programs you value, programs like Central Time. Give to WPR at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. We continue now our conversation about the impact of the $2 trillion economic recovery package signed into law a couple weeks back. David Primo stays with us, professor of political science and business administration at the University of Rochester. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what the government has done so far? Do you think there are more steps needed? How is this affecting you? Are you seeing these individual checks coming? Are you a small business owner who's applied for this the PPP, the like short-term thing that helps you stay afloat for a while you're shut down? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Joe is with us in Green Bay. Joe, hello.
Hi. I'm just calling. My husband and I received a stimulus check this week, for $2,400, and we're both working full time and making pretty good money. I don't understand why we got one. Who's prioritizing and determining who's getting these checks? And you know what? We're not going to spend it. It's going into a savings, and we may end up giving it to friends of ours that are less fortunate right now.
Thank you, Joe, for sharing that story. This was a debate in the rollout of this thing, David. Should we target this to people affected, or is it faster to just give it to everybody under a certain economic limit?
The motivation behind giving it to everybody under a certain certain income level was that it would help get money into the economy. But as a caller mentioned rightly, a lot of people are afraid, and it's the uncertainty that the government is trying to deal with, but they're still not likely to spend that money. Many people are likely to save that money. That said, even though it's not the most efficient way perhaps to distribute the money, it for many people that is going to be a lifeline for them. And it's important to keep in mind that these payments are on top of the additional unemployment benefits that have been offered by the federal government. So somebody who is recently unemployed will be getting additional payouts from the federal government on top of these checks. So when you put it all together, the people who are the most in need are likely to get the biggest payouts. But without a doubt, there is some friction in the system in that individuals who don't, I don't want to use the word don't need the money, but for whom this money is not a lifeline, are still going to get the funds. And there are, I've seen advice in various venues that maybe one way to deal with this, if you receive this money and you don't need it, one option is to save it. Another is to donate it to a charity that is helping those individuals most affected by COVID-19.
Thanks again for the call, Joe. We go to Rick now in Tomahawk. Rick, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Rick?
I'm a frontline worker, and I haven't had time yet to get my 2019 taxes done. I did file my 2018 taxes, and I went to the IRS website to the Get My Payment tool. Three-quarters of the time, the website's not working, and then another portion of the time, it comes up, you have yet to determine whether you're eligible to receive these funds or not, something to that effect. And now we're talking about whether our president needs to get his name printed on the memo portion of these checks. So I guess my question is, realistically, if I file my 2018 taxes and I am entitled to the $1,200, but it's going to come in the form of a paper check, realistically, when can I expect this?
Rick, thanks for the call. I don't know if you have that kind of timeline, David, but can you talk about the glitches in the process a little bit?
Yeah, that's the sort of it's the $1,200 million question, right? When are these checks actually going to arrive? This was the risk of ramping up this program so quickly. It was necessary to try to get money into the hands of Americans quickly, but the reality is that the Internal Revenue Service is not really, it wasn't set up, right, to be able to, and the Treasury Department is not really set up to cut checks on a moment's notice like this, where they have to determine eligibility. So rest assured, I'm not sure that's the right phrase, but rest assured there will be mistakes in this process. There will be glitches in this process. It will not be smooth. The question is, what's the alternative, right? Well, is there a better alternative to get money in the hands of every American quickly? Perhaps there were. This is the one that Congress picked, and now it's the job of the Trump administration to make this work. But I understand the caller's frustration that the website is rolled out, the website doesn't work, and for people, again, for whom this money is a lifeline, it's really important they get this money sooner rather than later.
Thanks a lot for the call. In our last couple of minutes, David, you mentioned earlier there are a lot of stories that you feel like are noise surrounding this issue. What would you point people in the public toward? What should we be keeping our eye on here?
I would focus on if you're interested in really understanding this story from an economic perspective, focus on the fundamentals, focus on unemployment numbers, focus on the number of companies that are that are going under at any point in time. Also, though, look to the long-term forecasts about what's going to happen with regard to COVID-19. And I think if there's one message I would give to the listeners right now, it's that to understand that all of these discussions about the long-term COVID trends are estimates. They're models. And so we always need to remember that models have error around them. And so we're not always, you know, we don't have precise knowledge about what is going to happen in the future. And so whenever you hear these statistics that sound scary about how many people are going to die from the coronavirus complications, keep in mind that often the media will unfortunately report the very, very worst case scenarios in these models rather than the average estimate or the lower bound estimate. So there is hope for many fewer deaths than are being anticipated. And it's important to always read these news reports with a critical eye and with an eye toward sort of what the range of scenarios are, not always just focus on the worst case scenario.
We'll leave it there. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's David Primo, professor of political science and business administration at the University of Rochester. He's the author of a book due out in June called Campaign Finance and American Democracy, What the Public Really Thinks and Why It Matters.